supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
Welcome to Voices in the Family. I'm Mike and Scott, sitting in for Dan Gottlieb today. Sensory processing disorder is a condition which impairs the processing of one or all senses, and the experience can be frightening and frustrating for children and their families. What they are going through is hard to convey, hard to understand, and very difficult to diagnose. So, what does sensory processing disorder mean? What is known about its causes, and what can be done about it? On today's show, we'll discuss this condition with some of the top experts in the field. But first, I recently spoke to two researchers at Temple University and visited a school which helps children with this disorder. Let's hear the report.
Weigh your jalapeno peppers. 69 cents.
Every day, our brains process millions of sensory stimuli. Noise, bright lights, clothes touching the skin. People affected by sensory integration disorder sense the information normally, but process it abnormally. Some have likened it to a traffic jam in the brain. Beth Pfeiffer is an assistant professor in the Department of Occupational Therapy at Temple University. She says there are two main areas affected by sensory integration disorder. The first one is the response to stimuli in our environment.
For example, a child who becomes extremely distraught when they have to wear a certain type of clothing or get their hair cut, or they're so sensitive to noise in the environment that they can't pay attention. And then there's another main area that we look at, and that's what we call praxis, and that's really the ability to perform motor tasks that are more new or unfamiliar. And when we're first learning a motor task, we rely heavily on sensory feedback.
As a result, children with sensory integration issues have trouble learning and interacting. Sometimes, especially in noisy situations, they may seem absent or fail to respond because they are tuning noise out. Dr. Moya Keneally, chair of the Occupational Therapy Department at Temple University, explains.
If they start tuning things out, what they end up doing is tuning out everything. So they might tune out all the auditory input in order to survive the situation, then you have to have them be able to not only untune out everything, but then selectively attend. So that's part of the process.
Sensory integration disorder can be a standalone diagnosis, but it's often part of other neurological conditions like autism spectrum or attention deficit disorder. Once diagnosed, doctors usually refer patients to specialized occupational therapy. It focuses on exposure to sounds, touch, and learning motor tasks. At the Talk Institute and School in Newtown Square, therapist Rachel Schoner works in a room that looks like the perfect place to play.
We have swings, we have huge pillows, we have big mats, we have fabric tunnels for children to crawl through, a lot of equipment for children to provide intervention that will help them move through these sensory problems.
Beth Pfeiffer recently studied the effect of this kind of therapy on children with autism and saw good results.
We found that they made significant changes in goals that were focused on social-emotional functioning, goals that were focused on that functional motor performance, and then also in the area of sensory regulation. And we looked at that in terms of attention to interaction, their ability to participate.
At the Talk Institute and School, occupational therapist Rachel Schoner is working with 8-year-old Liam.
Got it.
He's jumping into a soft barrel and navigating the different obstacles in the room.
Jump, Liam! Jump!
Liam had seizures as a baby. He didn't walk until he was 2 and didn't speak. His parents never got an exact diagnosis.
I kept thinking, oh, he'll get over it. And he's not going to get over it. He's going to work through it. And that's what we realized. We kept going to doctors and kept going to doctors, and finally we realized what he needs is therapy, not doctors.
His mother, Amy Murphy Nolan, has seen many positive changes in Liam's behavior since enrolling him in the school.
He is much more organized. He can sequence things more, meaning, understand what comes next and how to wait for it. His speech has been extraordinary. Before he was coming here, he could string a couple of words. Now he can string full sentences and even better full thoughts.
Researchers agree that this type of therapy works, but they are not sure why yet. They are still investigating the areas of the brain that are affected by sensory integration disorder. After several months of intense therapy, Amy Murphy Nolan has changed her outlook and her hopes for her son Liam's future.
There are days where I think he'll be a functional, fabulous adult and hopefully go to college. And there are days where I'm scared he's going to do a job that is saved for people with developmental disabilities. I don't know. I'm not giving up hope. I've learned to live in the day.
Parents are instructed to continue occupational therapy at home, so a typical day for Amy now includes brushing her son's skin with a soft brush to calm him down, or doing physical exercises with him. She plans to keep him at the speech school until he's ready for the next step in his education, whether it's at a mainstream or a special education school. From WHYY's Behavioral Health Desk, I'm Mike and Scott. And joining us today here on Voices in the Family are Carol Kranowitz and Dr. Sarah Schoen. Kranowitz is the author of The Out of Sync Child, Recognizing and Coping with Sensory Processing Disorder. And Schoen is the director of Applied Research of Sensory Processing Disorder Foundation and clinical director at the Sensory Therapies and Research Center in Colorado. Carol and Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with such a wonderful group. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, thank you so much for including us as well.
Okay, let's start with you, Carol. We heard from Liam's mom in this piece, and she described, you know, first of all these doctor's visits, not getting an exact diagnosis, then Liam not speaking, Liam not walking, he has trouble learning. Is all of that typical?
I don't know. I don't know what's typical. I would say it's common that that parents are frustrated because they go to doctors who are not familiar with this subject. It isn't taught at medical school, and it's not something that medicine can fix. So I do know a lot of parents are pulling their hair out when the doctors will say, "Oh, Liam will grow out of it. Give him time. You're a helicopter mom. You're hovering too closely." But the reason I have to say I don't know is I am an OT wannabe, but I'm not an OT. I'm a preschool teacher.
An OT's occupational therapist.
That's correct.
Yes. But the symptoms, the delay in learning, walking, she also described, which we didn't hear about in the piece, but she said Liam wouldn't eat. So all these things are things that we see in this population.
Yes, because when the child's not comfortable with his body, when the body's not cooperating, it affects how he functions during the day. And dysfunction is what this sensory processing disorder is all about. If the child, for instance, is very uncomfortable touching people or objects or being touched passively by people or objects, he's not going to want to touch. He's going to want to hide under the table when he gets to school, and he'll want to pull himself away from a group of children seated on the floor. He'll be on the edge so that he won't have to handle the prospect of being touched unexpectedly.
And if you want to join the conversation, our number here is 1-888-477-9499. Again, that's 1-888-477-9499. Maybe you're a parent. Maybe you are working in this field. Give us a call and let us know what you're thinking about. Now, Sarah, let me turn to you. When was this disorder first described? Where are we in terms of research? How long have we been researching this?
Well, we've been known about this disorder since the 1960s through the work of Dr. Jean Ayers, who was an occupational therapist and a neuroscientist in California, who brought this to our awareness. And she developed a test to help us identify some of the subtypes of sensory processing disorder. And here at the SPD Foundation, Dr. Lucy Miller and our research team here has been working with researchers across the country to get a better understanding of some of the brain problems that we think might be causing some of the sensory processing disorder symptoms, as well as looking at some of the other environmental or genetic factors that might be resulting in sensory processing problems.
And again, the senses are perceived, the stimuli are perceived normally, but they are not processed correctly. And some have, I use this term also in my feature, it's often been described as a traffic jam in the brain. Can you kind of describe what happens there?
Well, I think that what happens is that they receive the sensory information, but it's not being interpreted properly, and they're not able to effectively respond appropriately. And one thing I want to emphasize that's really important is that we are all sensory beings, and that this only becomes a disorder when it interferes significantly with an individual's daily life activities. And since we're talking about children, we're talking mostly about school and home and community routine.
Yeah, actually, I was going to ask maybe Carol or both of you. I think in our daily routines, there are millions of things that we take for granted in terms of sensory processing, tuning out noises and responding to noises that we need to respond to, taking visual clues that are important but ignoring others. Maybe talk a little bit about all the things that go on that we may not even think about that come naturally.
When we think about the child's day, you could start with waking up in the morning, and sensory issues might interfere with the child's regulation and how he can rev himself up when he needs to. If he finally gets out of bed, getting dressed is a problem because sensory processing allows us to be able to make sequence, to put things in order, to get organized, to put an arm into a sleeve and another arm into the other sleeve. You'll see little children who should be at the age where they can take care of some of self-help skills like getting dressed or basic grooming, and you'll see that they have great difficulties in their motor coordination. They can't put the toothpaste on the toothbrush. They can't brush their hair. They have difficulty getting the shoes on the right feet. Eating is a problem. Sometimes they'll overreach and spill the pitcher of milk as they're trying to put the milk into their bowl, or because of the sensory information being misinterpreted as it comes through their muscles and joints, they'll bring the spoon back, but they'll miss their face. Many children have sensory under-responsivity, and
yeah,
so they would not notice that they have crumbs on their faces. And,
right. I want to get to, there are different types of this disorder, and I want to get to that in a little bit. But before we do, Sarah, do we know anything about where in the brain this takes place and what areas of the brain are not functioning correctly when a child has this disorder?
Well, we're just in the formative stages of understanding what is not working properly. In our labs here in Denver, we are looking at two different measures. One is a brain measure, which is called electroencephalography, which is a measurement of what happens in the brain when we receive a specific sensory event, such as a touch or a sound. And what we see with children who have sensory processing disorder is that different brain regions are activated as compared to typically developing children. We also see that they have a greater stress reaction, which is reflected by a more sweating to sensory events, so that we're seeing that they're in more of a fight or flight reaction, when exposed to different sensory experiences like the touch of a feather or the sound of a tone or the smell of mint or wintergreens, so that they are not suppressing their responses to repeated stimuli so that they become sort of irrelevant. They're responding as if each time they experience the stimuli, it is novel and new. So while we don't know exactly what brain regions, we do know that there are problems that are coming from the brain as well as from what's called our peripheral nervous system, our fight or flight response.
And in terms
of... Could I just say
something? Sure.
So often when children have these repeated responses to something that most people would consider benign, Sarah was talking about the touch of a feather or a sniff of wintergreen or so. In this test that Lucy Miller has devised, the sensory challenge protocol, one of the stimuli is a chair tilt. And so often, let's take that as an example, if a child is moved unexpectedly, like someone pushes him on the swing and he reacts over and over again in a negative way, the parent or the teacher wants to say, get over it. You know, it's not that big a deal. Why are you making such a big deal about it? And what I think it's so important for parents and teachers to understand is the child cannot get over it. It is a response he is not in charge of. And so often these children are misunderstood. They're called sissies or uncooperative or lazy or, you know, they get bad adjectives attached to them, and it's all because they're just trying to be self-protective in a confusing world.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I was actually thinking about this, Carol, in terms of how much our world has changed. Our world is so full of stimuli, and I thought maybe a child like that would do better living in an 18th or 19th century world in the countryside where it's quieter, things are more, you know your world, you know where you live. There's not this constant noise and stuff going on.
And
does that make it harder?
It's meaningless, so much of this noise and hubbub is so meaningless. And I agree with you completely, because when in the olden days, kids had chores. They did hard work. And what Sarah and other therapists say to parents is give your children opportunities for heavy work activities. So they're carrying cartons of books, and they're pushing furniture around, and they're vacuuming and raking and pushing wheelbarrows, and that's why kids love these things, because that's like self-therapy for some of them. But we don't allow our children to get near any of that old-fashioned, vigorous activity that we're born to do that kind of thing, and we're depriving our children of it.
And this is the kind of activity we also may seek out after a really stressful day at work with a lot of stimulation. We may go for a run, or we may go for a massage. So we seek out that kind of...
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's take a phone call at 1-888-477-9499. We have Robert on the line. Hi, Robert. You're on Voices in the Family.
Hi. Thank you. I have a child on the spectrum, and... So we're sensitized to some of these different issues, and it seems, you know, we hear about a different situation like sensory integration disorder or auditory processing disorder or, you know, visual processing disorder, and everybody who we would come, you know, go to try to investigate or get a diagnosis from that perspective gives their impression from that perspective, and therefore... Oh, yeah, it's an auditory processing, because you see how when we do this, this happens, and the same thing may happen with a visual processing person. How do you go about getting a good objective diagnosis for the...
Okay, Robert, I think we might have lost you, but the question is, how does he get a diagnosis? Is there a way to get a diagnosis? Or, like the mother described in the report that we heard, she finally just sought out therapy that worked for her son, and she didn't get a diagnosis. So what are our options? Maybe, Carol, you can take that?
Well, I hear different things. I think what Robert was suggesting is that when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So if he takes his child to the auditory specialist, it's going to be an auditory problem. Or I think that was what he might be saying.
Yeah.
I do know it's important to get a multidisciplinary assessment where you have as many experts as possible looking at the whole child. I have heard sometimes a hospital is a good place for that, a children's hospital. And then I have heard people say, no, not a children's hospital. So maybe, Sarah, do you have an opinion?
Well, I think the reality is that there is a lot of overlap amongst the different developmental disabilities. Over 78% of children with autism spectrum disorder do have sensory symptoms. I agree with what you said, Carol, that a multidisciplinary assessment actually is beneficial. But the issue is that it is very difficult to tease out these various different senses. I mean, the visual system, the auditory system, the touch system, all are involved in sensory processing problems. And occupational therapists are usually the best trained professionals that have assessment tools that have the clinical experience to be able to help sort out the different pieces of the puzzle. And I do think that the therapy is probably, in the long run, the most important place to be, because there's also a lot of sometimes misdiagnosis,
mm-hmm.
that a child who doesn't make good eye contact with adults is doing so because they're overwhelmed by the visual stimuli, not necessarily that they're not socially interacting with that individual. And so by treating the child from a sensory perspective, many times you can see some of the symptomatology that's been used to identify a child as on autistic spectrum disorder or even ADHD tend to resolve.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about therapy, but let's take a quick break. Our guests today are Carol Kranowitz and Dr. Sarah Schoen. Kranowitz is the author of The Out-of-Sync Child, Recognizing and Coping with Sensory Processing Disorder. And Schoen is the director of Applied Research of the Sensory Processing Disorder Foundation and the clinical director at the Sensory Therapies and Research Center in Colorado. We'll be back after a short break. Our number is 1-888-477-9499 if you want to join the conversation. I'm Mike and Scott, filling in for Dan Gottlieb today, and you're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Supporting WHYY, UMDNJ School of Nursing, where college graduates can earn a bachelor's degree in nursing in only 15 months. At UMDNJ's Stratford, New Jersey campus, the Accelerated Bachelor of Science program in nursing helps students enter the field of nursing in less time than traditional programs. An information session will be held in late July at their Stratford campus. Registration is available at sn.umdnj.edu.
Your 401k might not be the secure retirement plan you think it is. On the next Fresh Air, economist Teresa Ghilarducci examines 401ks and traditional pension plans and offers her new proposal for retirement security. Ghilarducci's new book is When I'm 64, The Plot Against Pensions and the Plan to Save Them. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 here on WHYY 91 FM.
And welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Mike and Scott, sitting in for Dan Gottlieb today, and we're talking about sensory processing disorder, which is a disorder that affects how we process all the stimuli that our senses get: touch, what we see, what we hear, all these things, and how it affects the people who have this disorder. Our guests are Carol Kranowitz and Dr. Sarah Schoen. Kranowitz is the author of The Out of Sync Child, Recognizing and Coping with Sensory Processing Disorder, and she has also written The Out of Sync Child Has Fun, Activities for Kids with Sensory Processing Disorder. Schoen is Director of Applied Research of the Sensory Processing Disorder Foundation and Clinical Director at the Sensory Therapies and Research Center in Colorado. Hello to both of you again.
Hello again.
Hello.
And before our break, we were just talking about getting a diagnosis, but more importantly, getting help for a child that's affected by this disorder. And the thing that we've been hearing about so far is occupational therapy. And we heard a little bit about how that works, exposing children to stimuli. Carol, can you describe what exactly goes on and how that works?
Mike, and you're asking the wrong one.
Then we'll turn to Sarah.
Thank you. Well, you know, as your piece, opening piece described, occupational therapy, using a sensory integration approach, looks oftentimes like typical play. The clinic has equipment such as swings and slides and jungle gyms or climbing walls. However, what is really important is that the therapist is trained to help to guide the child to achieve successes that typically wouldn't occur in their, you know, unguided play, so that the goal is to enhance their participation in daily life activities, learning, and play. And it's not about teaching specific tasks or doing specific exercises. It's really about enhancing the sensory information that they're getting from all the different senses. And we've been talking a lot about touch and hearing and vision, but we also have been emphasizing the importance of the information that we get from our muscles and our joints, as well as information that we get from our gravity receptors, mm-hmm. and about movement and our position in space, that is so critical for children doing the kinds of motor activities that are involved in typical sports or play, things that are important for being able to maintain upright positions in a chair or standing, endurance, learning to ride a bicycle or a tricycle. So therapy is individualized based on the type of problem that a child presents with.
And I want to talk about these other senses in just a second, but we do have Camilla on the phone, and she's actually had experience with occupational therapy with her child. Hi, Camilla, you're on Voices in the Family.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure, and you have a four-year-old?
I do. I have a four-and-a-half-year-old daughter, and, you know, we always noticed that she seemed to be, you know, a rather fussy baby, certain positions. A lot seemed to bother her, but when she was first evaluated by our early intervention program here in Philadelphia, at the end of the evaluation, they actually gave me the name of a book to read, and it was The Out of Sync Child. So, and I came home and I read the whole thing in like a day, and I thought, wow, this really describes a lot of my daughter. She later went on to get diagnosed with Asperger's, although a lot of people say it doesn't fit her real well, but it allows us to get the services. And that's one comment I have, is getting occupational therapy covered. But I just have to say that she's had lots of services, and but the one that I really feel has made the biggest difference in her life is her occupational therapist, who's you know, certified in sensory integration, and it's just changed her world.
Can you describe a little bit how she has changed some of the things that she maybe wasn't able to do before and is able to do now, how situations at home and at school have changed?
Sure. Well, she used to be a very tentative child, and she had really heightened senses. You know, she could smell the car, the engine. We would walk into a bookstore, and she would say, like, smells like books. She can, his supersonic hearing, and touch. You know, we did the brushing protocol as well. You know, she was sensitive to unexpected touch. Was very upsetting to her, loud noises. And, you know, she had a lot of delayed language, and again, she had, you know, poor eye contact on and off. You know, I would always be able to see when she was becoming overwhelmed. I would,
yeah.
It was almost like a glaze would sort of come over her, and her eyes would begin to kind of dart around, and, you know, I could tell she's being overwhelmed right now by something. And
how has that changed? So she can deal better with all those situations now?
She can. She's doing beautifully. She's in, you know, typical school with no assistance. You know, her language is right where it should be for any typical 4.5-year-old. And she's just able to handle a lot. And the one thing I have to say is she's happier and she's more confident about the things that she can do. And she still has, you know, far to go. But it's really just changed her world and changed our world as well. Because, aww, you know,
wonderful to hear about this.
Yeah. I'm. Thank you so much for calling in, Camilla, and thank you for sharing that experience with us. Now, it's great to hear that these changes happen, Sarah. You said in the beginning we're not really sure where in the brain this takes place, but is it almost like the brain is getting rewired as a result of this therapy? You know, we hear a lot about neuroplasticity, the ability of the brain to change as a result of an experience. So is that what is happening?
We believe that is what is happening, and there are some people who are researching, you know, changes in when sensory experiences are combined with a positive reward, a more positive emotional experience, that changes how we respond in the future to those same conditions. And that is what we believe is happening. One brain structure that we talk a lot about is called the amygdala, and the amygdala has associations with negative experiences or ties emotions to our experiences. So that in therapy, as Camilla just described, her child being happier and more confident because she has had positive experiences linked with those sensations that were previously causing her distress and overwhelming her system. And so we believe that emotional component is changing in its association with those sensory experiences being more positive.
And Carol, I want to talk a little bit more to you about the effects on our social interactions, on the emotions of these children. I've heard that a lot of them also suffer from anxiety simply because the world is such an overwhelming place.
That's true. I would say that high anxiety is one of the biggies connected to sensory processing disorder. And my experience has been as a preschool teacher with teaching 3 to 5-year-olds for many, many years, and countless children who got me interested in learning about sensory processing in the first place, countless children would seem so out of sync. And in a school where 11 children were experimenting with rhythm band instruments like triangles and rhythm sticks, we'd see one little child cowering fearfully in the corner, or experimenting with egg yolks at the science table. Another child would just be horrified by that. And then there were children whose feet never left the ground because their vestibular systems, their understanding of their place in the world was compromised, and they didn't want to leave their rather tenuous attachment to the earth by getting on a swing. And so this anxiety in little children was very evident, especially compared to the typical kids who were playing all the time.
It sounds like a terrifying experience.
Yes, and terrifying is, I think, true. And Dr. Ayers, when she was talking about the vestibular system, she pointed out that people who have a dysfunctioning vestibular system have a primal fear of certain kinds of movement. So
anxiety is huge, and it begins to snowball. You know, an example would be picky eating. A lot of tactile and proprioceptive issues can contribute to a child's reluctance to put a variety of foods in his mouth and chew them and swallow them.
Yeah, when it gets to, there's a whole big issue in terms of diet. But before we get to that, real quickly, Carol, so I would imagine that in addition to issues with learning, with interactions, this would make it very difficult for a child to make friends.
That's exactly what I was getting at. And just this picky eating as an example, that I have seen children refuse to go to their friends' houses to play because the mom there might put chunky peanut butter in the sandwich. And the child is the anxiety is building in anticipation of what might happen. So what we want to do is catch these children before they fall. And I tell parents, look at, try to figure out what the antecedents of the child's worried behavior is. Is it perhaps that the kid was overwhelmed by a sensation? Or could it be that this little one has to move more and get more? He's underwhelmed. He's been sitting too long. Try to figure out, is there a sensory way we can help this child so that he can participate more?
Actually, you just touched on something that we want to get to, that some children, as a result of this, are overstimulated and other children are understimulated. And we have Dennis on the phone at 1-888-477-9499. Hi, Dennis. You're on Voices in the Family.
Hi, how are you?
Good. And you have two children affected by this?
Yep, I have one that is the apps. He has been diagnosed with Asperger's. And he is the epitome of what the last lady who just called in, exactly the same. Every little thing when he was younger was a big deal. Every little sound, every little noise. And we got him into early intervention, and he went to a special school before he went to kindergarten this year, and it's amazing how different he is.
And what about your other?
Well, my little one, he is the exact opposite. He has sensory processing disorder the opposite way, and you guys were just talking about it, as how he needs to have the more physical activity, the louder, the rougher, the run around, the push toys, everything. And it's he has three therapists that come every week. He's got, you know, the occupational therapist, the speech, because he was late in speaking. But he has made a huge turnaround in the last 8 months. And it's amazing.
Thank you.
I hope you're taking notes, because it's so wonderful after the therapy kicks in to go back and look at what your kids were like 2 years ago, and then very gratifying to see how much progress they've made.
And Sarah, for those children who seek overstimulation, are they more prone to take more risks to do maybe dangerous things?
Oh, absolutely. There are many different subtypes, and although in Dennis's case they're clearly different, there is a lot of overlap as well. But the children who tend to be under-responsive oftentimes are also sensory seeking or craving, as I think Dennis was suggesting, that his little one needs to have more physical activity, things louder, rougher, strong sensations that activate them, as opposed to the children who are over-responsive and need more calming kinds of activities. These are oftentimes the children who are labeled as inattentive, as possibly at risk for having attention deficit disorder, because they're always on the move, constantly in need for that sensory input.
Now, let me ask you, Sarah, we've heard a lot about occupational therapy that seems to help children. What about medications? If we're dealing with a high level of anxiety, do medications work? Are there certain medications that maybe help with other aspects?
Absolutely. There is a place for medication. I mean, my advice to people is to start with the therapies and see how much can be accomplished through the use of the therapies in terms of reducing that anxiety, improving the attention span of the child. But sometimes, because of the overlap of the different developmental disabilities and sensory processing problems, sometimes there's a need for both. There's an overlap of close to 60% of children who have attention deficit disorder and hyperactivity also have sensory symptoms. And those children might need medication plus occupational therapy. But, you know, I like to think of medication as more of a secondary intervention, especially with the young children, because the therapy can improve their functioning so much that even as the stories that we've heard to date of the 4.5-year-old kids, that many of their symptoms remediate. And I think what was the hallmark to me is how much these families have learned and understand about their children. And that, I think that's a huge piece of helping children cope. It's not just coming to the therapist once a week or twice a week, but it's the understanding of the whole family that this is a physiological issue. It is, has nothing to do with parenting. It has that there is something that's different about their child.
And to continue the therapy at home as well in play and in your interactions. And we do have to take a short break, and we have so much more to talk about. It's tough that we're running out of time already here. We're talking about sensory processing disorder today, and my guests are Carol Kranowitz and Dr. Sarah Schoen. Kranowitz is the author of The Out of Sync Child, Recognizing and Coping with Sensory Processing Disorder. And Schoen is the director of Applied Research of the Sensory Processing Disorder Foundation. And we will be right back after a short break. I'm Mike and Scott, sitting in for Dan Gottlieb today, and you're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY 91 FM.
From Public Radio International, I'm Ray Suarez on The Next America Abroad, Integrating Islam. In recent years, the secular nations of Europe have been rocked by violence from Muslim extremists within. We explore Muslim integration on both sides of the Atlantic to see why homegrown radicalism has been a problem in Europe and whether it could become one in the U.S.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Alex Chadwick.
And I'm Madeline Brand.
For news that's concise.
This really was a day when the president wanted to send a signal to
some helpful advice.
You want to ask them, what kind of credentials do you have? What are your qualifications? What services do you offer?
And always something nice.
There are ponies here. 5, 6, 7. And it looks like there's a foal out there.
Join us on NPR's Day to Day.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
And welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Mike and Scott, sitting in for Dan Gottlieb today, and we're talking about sensory processing disorder. We have a whole lot to talk about before the show is over. Carol Kranowitz, author of The Out of Sync Child, let me ask you, what happens to these children in school? What should school ideally look like? And what seems to work better, specialized schooling or mainstream? I know that's three questions.
Yeah.
But
what does it look like at school? Well, I would say many young children entering school are very tentative, typically have separation anxiety. They are reluctant to get out of the car. They might be tearful until they begin to feel that school is safe and comfortable. It's this intrinsic worry that they're not going to be safe, that they're going to be knocked over, or that they're going to be made to touch or do something that it makes them very uncomfortable or incompetent. That's my initial reaction to children coming in September and October.
So is it easier for children to be in a specialized program maybe in the beginning until some of these issues can be addressed?
I wouldn't say that necessarily. I think the parents need to find a school, if possible, where the teachers are open to learning about something like this that they might not know about, but a good teacher wants to learn more so she can have a better running classroom. A special school might be good. It might not be good. And it's one of those things where it all depends. If the child just needs a quieter setting with a better ratio of fewer children to the adults, yes, I would say that might work out. But on the other hand, if the child is an under-responsive child who needs a lot of stimulation, then a big, active classroom might be a good thing for the child. So it's one of those, it all depends. And so much boils down to the teachers, too.
Yeah. So it's important for parent to continuously evaluate how the child is doing. Okay. Now, Sarah, let me ask you, we had a question from Janet, and she wanted to know whether you can develop sensory processing disorder as an adult. Let me ask you that first, and then I have a follow-up question.
That's a really good question. We do see a lot of adults who, when they finally learn about sensory processing problems, that they say, oh my gosh, that's what I've had all my life. In terms of whether it develops in adulthood, usually there is some precipitating event. There could be an illness that causes sensory issues. There could be a traumatic event that can cause some sensory issues. But typically what we see in adults is an awareness that comes from reading something like Carol's book or Dr. Lucy Miller's book that says, oh my gosh, this is why I have felt out of place all of my life, or I've had difficulty establishing an intimate relationship with a partner.
And then what does treatment look like for adults?
Well, that's a great question. For adults here, that we see adults here at the Star Center in Colorado, and a lot of it is helping them understand the role of the sensory systems in the behaviors that they've observed or the issues that they've had all of their life, because understanding is one piece of it. Then the next piece of it is what kind of sensory activities can I build into my daily life that will help me feel better, so that the over-responsive person might need to do more touch activities that are deep, or get to the deep muscles and joints to help bring them into a calm state. Even just being able to verbalize to another person, you know, I don't like it when somebody touches me unexpectedly, or I have difficulty going to, out to dinner to a loud restaurant or to a mall shopping. Those kinds of things, combined with some specific sensory activities that they can do on a daily basis, are usually our recommendations when working with adults.
And then, Carol, I want to get to another issue. We had a question from Sally, and just because we're running short on time, I'm going to paraphrase it. She was wondering what your opinion was on specialized diets for children who are affected by this disorder. For example, a gluten-free diet.
I think that's a very good idea. I am impressed by children's stories where they have gone off gluten and casein, the casein in the dairy products along with the gluten in the wheat products, and I've heard time and time again how their improvements are fabulous. They have more stamina, they are not irritable or aggressive, they improve in attention, they stop having stomach aches. Many children complain of having stomach aches, and they have gassiness in their intestinal tracts, and a lot of that intolerance to the gluten and the casein happens in children with sensory issues.
How about sugar?
I know less about sugar, but I would assume that that's maybe Sarah knows, I would assume that that's also a wonderful thing to avoid if possible. A you know, if parents can think about going to the grocery store and trying to stay away from the middle of the store where everything is processed.
Right.
We don't need that food. We need the lettuce. You know, we need the fresh plant food. That's the best thing. Again, going back to our perfect world 200 years ago, right?
Yeah. Where we Now, Sarah, let me ask you first, but this is a question for both of you. We heard in the very beginning the woman, the mother of Liam, who said, you know, sometimes I hope he's going to go to college, and some days I'm worried that he'll do a job that's reserved for people who have this kind of disorder. What are we looking at in terms of outcomes? What can parents expect? Do we know? Sarah?
Well, I don't know if there's research behind this, but certainly from over 25 years of clinical experience working with children who have sensory processing issues, there is no reason why they cannot live a normal, happy life. And, you know, that with intervention and with an understanding from the family, from the school, and a participation of the child's individual's whole world, that there really shouldn't be anything that stands in that individual's way of achieving their maximum potential.
And Carol, just real quick, you are a teacher. Is this becoming more known among teachers, which I think would be very important in helping these children?
Yes, I'm glad to say there's incremental expansion in understanding. I love it when I meet up with teachers who say, "Oh yes, I've heard about this and I want to learn more, and I've tried some ideas like movement breaks every 10 minutes and I see significant improvements in everybody's attention." And you know, that's my goal, to be able to help parents and teachers see how, with some practical suggestions and changes in the environment, all children are going to benefit. And it's not, I'm not suggesting things that are way out there.
Easy things that people can do in school and at home to
help
all children. And with that, we have to close. I want to thank both of you so much
thank
for joining
you.
Us
You're
today.
You're very welcome. Thanks
so much.
Thank you. Our guests today were Carol Kranowitz and Dr. Sarah Schoen. Kranowitz is the author of The Out of Sync Child, Recognizing and Coping with Sensory Processing Disorder. And you can find her online at www.out-of-sync-child.com. So that's The Out of Sync Child, but with all dashes in between. And Schoen is Director of Applied Research of the Sensory Processing Disorder Foundation and Clinical Director at the Sensory Therapies and Research Center in Colorado. And for more information on the SPD Foundation and her work, visit spdfoundation.net. If you have a question, a show idea, or a comment, please email us at voices@whyy.org. And you can listen to archive editions of Voices in the Family on our website, whyy.org/voices. And the engineer for today's show has been Bob Purdick. Voices in the Family is produced by Gita Simons and Elisa Walters. I'm Maiken Scott, behavioral health reporter for WHYY, sitting in for Dan Gottlieb.